Catholic Conversations on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Welcome to Catholic Conversations. I'm your guest host today, Royce Hood, and I'm so excited to be here on Catholic Spirit Radio hosting this show, and it's just been a lot of fun. When I reached out to Catholic Spirit Radio a few months ago, I just sort of was like, hey, I've got this radio show that I'm trying to get off the ground called Truth, Culture, Life, and here's a link. I never expected to hear back, but lo and behold, I did. And they're like, you know, why don't you come over and maybe we'll have you guest host the program. And before I knew it, we have our own show that airs weekly, Truth, Culture, Life. And it's a lot of fun. And it's so cool being able to share my experience and share, you know, have conversations with people from around the country, including my co-host Father Orsi and Sierra Heidkamp. But I'm here today for Catholic Conversations, which is an amazing program that airs on Catholic Spirit Radio. And I've got a very special guest, Leah Sonic. And Leah, where are you from?
Well, I live in New Jersey. I live in Northern New Jersey, but I have to say I am originally from New York. And if you live around here, I like to make the distinction. So I'm from New York, but I live in New Jersey.
That's a big deal. You know, that's a big deal. I grew up in South Florida, and everybody in my neighborhood, I was like the only Floridian, and everybody was either from New York or New Jersey. There's a couple people from Pennsylvania, but everybody was from New York and New Jersey. And there was like a beef between the New Yorkers and the New Jersey people. And it all came down to who had the better pizza.
Okay, that could be one of the things. But it was just, if you were from New York, that was the better place to be from. Just saying. No, maybe.
And who had the better water? I think that was the other argument, too.
It is the water. New York has the better water.
And that's why the pizza is better in New York, because of the water.
I think so. But you know what? New Jersey's been beautiful and wonderful place to raise our family. So I make that little joke tongue in cheek. I don't want to offend anyone, including my kids who are from New Jersey.
I like to offend people, especially New Yorkers and New Jersey people, because New Yorkers and Jersey people, they have tempers. But what's great is you could really irritate somebody, but then they're kind of softies too. And as long as you're like authentically and genuinely sorry, I feel like they forgive pretty quickly.
Yeah, we do. We've got big hearts, right?
Big hearts, right? So, okay. Typically when we have guests on this program, we're like, you know, here's so-and-so, they're doing this, they're doing that, and they're with this organization. Mm-hmm. You're sort of like, you're incredible because you're doing a few different things, and you are very much in the discernment process with your own ministry. The reason, and we'll get into what that is, but the reason why I got involved with you is because of my friend Tracy, Tracy Windsor over at Be Not Afraid. And Be Not Afraid is an incredible ministry that provides, they provide care and love and support, and frankly, ministry to people that have prenatal diagnosis with their children. And I met Tracy because my wife Elise and I had a baby who had something called Potter's syndrome. And so we were introduced to her through that, and we've become friends, and I do some work for them now, and it's been wonderful. So I was asking her, I was like, you know, I'd love to get you on. And if our listeners don't know, Tracy is battling cancer right now, so we want to keep her in our prayers. So she was not able to come on, but she recommended you. And she said, this is somebody that you want to get on, and she does training and peer ministry and just does amazing things. So tell us a little bit about your work and what you do.
I would be happy to. Thank you. Let me just clarify. I'm receiving the training. I'm not giving the training. So I just want to be clear about that. So my story with Be Not Afraid and Tracy is, I don't know, I guess I'll start at the beginning. 27 years ago, my husband and I had a baby named Loretta. Loretta May was her name, and she was born on April 10th, 1996, and a few days after her birth, she was diagnosed with trisomy 18, which is something that we had never heard of, and the news was delivered in a very bleak way. We were offered no hope for her life or her ability to even live. We were told that her condition was incompatible with life, even though she was alive and breathing and living. We were told this by the medical community. So we were devastated, heartbroken, alone. And so we took our baby home and we were told she would live, you know, 2 to 3 days, maybe 2 to 3 weeks, maybe 2 or 3 months, but you know, that there was no hope for her. So, it was scary, you know, it was really scary, to have nowhere to turn and no support, from the medical community. But what ended up happening was she ended up living for 8 months. And so we kind of turned it around and said, wait a second, we're not waiting for her to die. We're going to live with her. And we did. And at the time we had 2 older children, we have since had a 4th child. And so, you know, having had that sweet and special baby in our lives changed us like all our children do. Right. And so I had always had on my heart a desire to, do something in the pro-life community. And I never knew that what that was. And then, I don't know, must've been 10 years ago or so, I was picked up our parish bulletin, and in there was this little blurb about a group called Be Not Afraid, and that they could serve parents who receive a prenatal diagnosis. And I thought, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. So I put it on the kitchen counter. 3 years later, I'm like, wait a minute, whatever happened to that place? What was the name of that? So I would periodically Google and not really find Be Not Afraid. Okay. So you fast forward, and it was, I remember it was around Labor Day weekend in 2019. I was reading, I follow Lila Rose and Live Action on social media. I was reading an article that she had posted, Lila Rose had posted. And in the article, she refers to Be Not Afraid with a link. And I said, oh my God, there it is. So I hit the link. I get directed right to the Be Not Afraid website. And I just type in an email. Hi, my name is Leah Sonic. This is my experience. I'd love to work, you know, help with your organization. And that's how I met Tracy.
So explain the diagnosis a little bit for us with your precious daughter. Explain yes. that for our listeners.
Thank you for, that's a good idea. So we, when she was born, she looked perfectly fine to me, right, and to my husband, but the neonatologist could see certain markers, right, that we wouldn't see, which is small for size, small for gestational age is what I should say. It, something about her facial features, which most people wouldn't notice, you know, her ears were lower, whatever the case. But after 4 days, they come back with the chromosomal tests and say, she has trisomy 18. And the way I learned a lot about chromosomes that day, right? And that is that we remember from our biology classes that each cell in the human body has a pair of chromosomes, and they're numbered 1 to 23. They're just numbered. And so when you have a trisomy, you have 3 of a particular chromosome. And in Loretta's case, it was 18. So most listeners are familiar with trisomy 21 because it is Down syndrome. And so the way the doctors explained it to us was that the reason we would know about Down syndrome children and not children with trisomy 18 is because those children with Down syndrome will live longer and will live, whereas trisomy 18 children will not. Trisomy 18 is also known as Edwards syndrome. And so the condition, you know, that diagnosis can carry any number of, I guess, anomalies or organ disruption within the child, but Loretta didn't really have any needs. I mean, she had a small VSD, which I always forget what that stands for, but it's a small hole in her heart. And it's kind of healed over time. She was able to feed on her own and breathe on her own. So we really lived like a normal family with her, but she did, you know, she was a failure to thrive. So she was born 4 pounds, 11 ounces, and she passed away at 8 months of age. And she was like 7.5 pounds, you know? So it was interesting because I was working the situation. So I would be out with her and someone might say, how old is your baby? And you know, let's say she's 5 months old and I'm sitting there going, well, how much do I want to get into this conversation with this person? So I would make it up, you know, and I would, oh, 2 months. And they'd say, well, what was her birthday? And I was like, oh, I'm trying to do the math, you know? So, and it was,
first of all, look, I mean, just God bless you guys. I just can't imagine how difficult, and as you said, I mean, it was probably scary.
It was very scary.
Right. But then I think you said something when we first got started that is really just profound and absolutely beautiful. You said, you know, we stopped waiting, basically waiting for her to die, and we started living with her. Wow. And just enjoying that moment, you know, not to take away from your story at all, but a number of years ago, a friend of mine who's an attorney lost his son to a car accident. It was very tragic and sudden and just not, I mean, just nothing other than just a car accident. And I remember at the funeral, I said, you know, I'm so sorry for your loss. And he looked at me and he said, don't be. God gave me 17 years with my son. And I could get choked up just hearing that now, because I remember at the time I wasn't a father myself at that time. And I just remember thinking like, wow, the strength and the faith and just the perspective, being able to look at it, that situation in that manner. And so I think about you, what you just said, living with her. And then being, I can imagine being in those situations and needing to explain. I mean, look, when we went through our situation with Fulton, we carried him to term knowing that when with Potter syndrome, no kidneys, which means no amniotic fluid, which means his bladder and lungs won't develop and his heart won't develop. And the diagnosis for him is he would be born and probably only live about 3 hours. And during that pregnancy, my wife is a bit smaller than normal because there wasn't the amniotic fluid. But, you know, people at the store, oh, congratulations. You know, how far along are you? And, you know, our hearts are breaking the whole time. And we tried to have that perspective. And I think we tried as a family to enjoy every moment of that pregnancy. And we did. Our whole family came together around Fulton was his name. And he ended up passing away before he was born. So he went from the womb to heaven, which in a sense was a big blessing. But I get it. I get what you're saying. Like how, you know, people are asking you, like, how old is your little girl? That must have just been so hard.
Yeah, it was at times. And some, it was interesting. And first of all, your story is a beautiful one too. And what a great example. I mean, to get that news that you received and to value that pregnancy and hold on to her, to your son like that is really beautiful and a great example for everyone. You know, just to understand that your child is still your precious child, however long you have him. Right. And then that story about your friend with the 17-year-old, I'm going to have to remember that one. That's really something. But you know, the funny thing, Royce, about the conversations with people is one time someone actually challenged me when I was sort of like making up the birth date, cause I didn't want to get into the details. I mean, it was August, and Loretta was 5 months old and we were on vacation. You know, that's, we lived the normal life. And someone turned to me in the, we were in the theater and he said, oh, how old is your baby? And I throw out a number and he's, when was her birthday? And I said, and I don't know. I give July something. He goes, well, that doesn't make her, you know, 8 weeks. That makes her 12 weeks. I mean, literally. And I was saying, oh my goodness. But anyway, so we have to take the light moments when we have them. But it was, you know, so like I said, we lived like as normal family as we could, a young growing family. And when the opportunity came up to serve as a peer minister through Be Not Afraid, it was really a beautiful gift because, you know, it was walking with parents who had that prenatal diagnosis and being able to listen to them and hold them up and recognize that their baby has dignity and how beautiful to have that time together, whatever that time is.
No, look, I mean, I know you said that you're not the one giving the training, you're in training.
Yes.
But with your experience and with everything you're telling me now and the fact that you are, you know, I'm sure you've talked to other parents that have been in similar situations. I mean, you're helping people so much, whether you even know it or not, and just by your example. And so, you know, the Lord has a way of using us when we open ourselves to his will. And sometimes even when we're stubborn, we're like, no, we're not doing it. He can use us anyway. Right. Tell us a little bit. And I want to get more into, I totally relate, by the way, and I'm sure our listeners can too. Here's a thing you want to get involved with. You put it on your fridge and 3 years later, you're like, oops. Right. I mean, that's the procrastination, busy American. I totally get it.
Right.
So you get Lila Rose, you get back into it. You get in touch with Be Not Afraid. What happened next? I mean, did you end up meeting other parents who had difficult situations as well?
Yes. So I actually trained at that time with Tracy to be able to serve as a peer minister for Be Not Afraid, which is a parent who's been through a similar experience, who is able to speak to a parent who is really struggling, you know, one of the things that Be Not Afraid has done that's so unique is recognizing that the diagnosis is the trauma, right? That's the trauma, that the medical community at large thinks that the birth is the trauma. And so they want to spare parents from the birth when the prenatal diagnosis is given. And are their parents are often encouraged to terminate very often. And it's a terrible, dark time for the parents because they've been traumatized by that diagnosis. And so if they're lucky enough to blessed enough to get to Be Not Afraid and find out about the beautiful work that they do, Tracy and the others who work there can help the parents through that pregnancy. And that's where a peer minister can come in, where if you have a mom who received a prenatal diagnosis, I can talk to that mom and say, yes, my daughter had what your child has been diagnosed with. And she was beautiful and, you know, we lived a great life. And that's not, you know, yeah, there's going to be tears because the trauma is also a grief. So when we received our diagnosis for Loretta, I didn't know that I was going through grief until she died. Because then when she died 8 months later, I said, whoa, these feelings I have about her death, these grief feelings, these are the feelings I had when we got her diagnosis. So I was able to make that connection. So while we received her diagnosis after she was born, if a parent like yourself receives a diagnosis while the baby is, while you're pregnant, that's still the trauma and a grief that a parent experiences. So just through my peer ministry training, I learned, you know, how to talk to parents and listen to them. The most important thing is to listen to them, to kind of hold their hands virtually, I guess. You know, I Be Not Afraid serves parents throughout the country and even overseas. So I was able to serve three different moms out of state each time. So I didn't actually meet with them in person while I was, you know, serving as their peer minister. One mom, however, I did meet after the fact because she lived in Illinois, and I was visiting my daughter in Chicago, and I took a car ride, and we got to meet in person, which was really, really special. And you know what, Royce, the parents are so strong. Like, that's the thing. You think that you're helping them. They're God to you. They're beautiful examples of unconditional love. They're strong. And this, when you see what a parent is going to go through to find that doctor that's going to listen to them, to find that hospital that will honor their birth plan, that will treat their baby as a precious baby, because often what happens, and I don't know if this happened in your case, but once the diagnosis is made prenatally, now the doctor sees the diagnosis as a problem to be solved, and the doctor has often lost sight of the baby.
And so let's stop there for a minute. We're going to come right back after our break. You're listening to Catholic Conversations on Catholic Spirit Radio. I'm your guest host, Royce Hood, and we're joined by Leah Sonic, who we're talking about prenatal diagnosis, and we'll be right back after this break.
Hi, this is Debbie Giorgiani from EWTN's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. I'll be hosting Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon on April 12th, 13th, and 14th. Yes, you'll hear me live on air, specifically speaking to you, the Catholic Spirit Radio listeners in Central and Northern Illinois. This will be the first time that Catholic Spirit Radio is having a live broadcast, so it's going to be a blast. Besides me, you'll also get to hear from a lot of people dropping by the station to make their donations. Plus, since our theme for the Carathon is Jesus, We Trust in You, we'll be talking and learning lots about divine mercy. It's sure to be an exciting 3 days. Catholic Spirit Radio is an outstanding and important voice in your community, and we must keep it on the air. Please join me in this effort because we need Catholic Radio now more than ever. Funds are needed to maintain and update equipment and pay the monthly expenses. We need your support, especially during these days. So save the date, Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon, April 12th through the 14th.
Hi, this is Kathy and Ann from Catholic Spirit Radio. We are looking for folks who would love to volunteer with us during our fundraisers and various other station events and tasks throughout the year.
We really need volunteers in the DeKalb, Sycamore, Morris, Joliet, and Lincoln areas, as well as Bloomington Normal.
If you have a few extra hours or more a month, put them to use for the Lord.
We would love to add your name to our Catholic Spirit Radio volunteer list. Contact us at office@catholicspiritradio.org.
Join Holy Trinity and Historic St. Pat's Parishes in Bloomington in welcoming internationally renowned authors, speakers, and theologians, Drs. Scott Hahn and John Bergsma, as they make a rare speaking appearance to Central Illinois. This special event is being hosted by Holy Trinity Church in Bloomington Saturday, April 29th, 8:45 to 3:30. Seating is limited, so please register now. Don't miss out on this inspiring and blessed event. Learn more at the Holy Trinity website at hsp-ht.org.
This is it, the final performances ever in Bloomington, Illinois. This is the last season for the spectacular performances of the American Passion Play, the greatest story ever told.
The American Passion Play brings Christian history to life. With authentic costumes, elaborate settings, and live animals. There's intrigue, drama, friendship, and as the plot unfolds, betrayal, sorrow, and love. You must see the American Passion Play before its final curtain falls at the Center for the Performing Arts in Bloomington.
Viewed by generation after generation, this is theater at its best. Performance dates are March 11, 18, 25, and April 1st. And each performance begins promptly at 1 p.m. Reserve your American Passion Play tickets today by calling 309-829-3903.
Has an abortion experience left you feeling empty and alone? Rachel's Vineyard Retreat offers healing for those who struggle with the emotional and spiritual pain. This retreat is for mothers and fathers, whether single or married, and for grandparents, siblings, or anyone suffering the effects of an abortion loss. Confidentially register now for the March 24th through 26th retreat by calling 309-264-1489 or by emailing rvrpeoria@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Conversations. I'm your host today, Royce Hood. And we were just having a conversation with Leah Sonic about some of the work that she's done. And she was just telling us that, you know, one of the that in peer ministry with parents who have experienced prenatal diagnosis, that she did meet one of the parents on a trip to Illinois. And kind of, you know, and you had mentioned to me as well, I mean, talking about our story, so much of the time when a when parents receive a bad diagnosis regarding their baby, the doctors just sort of turn off that switch. And they're like, you know, they almost treat the baby as a problem. And it's, you know, sort of more annoying than anything. We've had parents, I know for a fact that parents have even been denied care. Like, yeah, no, we're not going to do any ultrasounds. You don't need to see the baby, go, you know, terminate the pregnancy, yada, yada, yada. Luckily, my wife and I, when we experienced that, I think our medical team knew that the abortion word wasn't even a word we would consider. And it was never raised in our case. We were very, very lucky. Our medical team was, you know, hey, come in every week if you want and do an ultrasound. And here's a heartbeat monitor so you can go home and listen to the heartbeat and, you know, really just enjoy the pregnancy, enjoy your son during this time that you have. And it was a long 9 months, but then looking back, it was so short, right? Yeah. And so we were blessed, but so many parents aren't. And I think that's a challenge. And so what's cool about Be Not Afraid is the fact that you've got these volunteers through that organization that sort of just like spiritually adopt moms and families. And we had like gift boxes coming of, you know, like a quilt and all sorts of just random stuff that were, it was just so nice. You know, and then ideas like, hey, be sure to get the footprints of your baby when your baby's born and, you know, do things like that. And we did. And so we have a plate of the baby's footprints that, you know, I don't know that I would have ever thought of that, you know, and all that you're going through and all that sort of that trauma, as you so rightly described. So that's just absolutely beautiful. Now, so what exactly is a peer minister do?
So a peer minister is someone who listens to the parent, who affirms their feelings, who helps them maybe tease through their feelings, you know, to try to, you know, figure out, well, you know, you're feeling this way and maybe your husband said that, maybe your husband's grieving in a different way. And just to try to just to support them, to serve them through this very traumatic period. Sometimes they feel like they're going crazy. They feel very alone. I mean, that's, I think, one of the most important things, because once someone is traumatized, they isolate. There's that fight, flight, or freeze, and no one around them understands what's happening, and the person doesn't even know how to reach out. I mean, they're just feeling alone. And so the biggest thing we can do is we can be present to them. We use a pastoral approach. Be Not Afraid uses a pastoral approach. And we want to be, you know, we want to be Christ for them if we could, you know, but we want to recognize their baby, the dignity of their baby, and let them know that this is, yes, you can do this, right? I mean, parents who've come looking for help generally have decided to carry to term. But they feel maybe like they're crazy for doing that. So it's a way to say, we can affirm, yes, this makes sense. You can mother your baby for as long as you have her.
Yeah, and that's beautiful.
And God will, and then let the baby write her own story, right? That's the other thing. We don't know. So when we had Loretta, two or three days or two or three months. In fact, they even said you could put her in a nursing home. And we're saying, wait a second. And the fact, the neonatologist said to us, because you have other children at home, you might want to put her in a nursing home. And we said, wait, we would never put our daughter in a nursing home, but she has a brother and sister at home who love her.
Yeah, this is part bizarre. And I hate to judge that person, but I find that people that give advice like that oftentimes don't have children, or, you know, maybe they, you know, had a terrible family experience. I don't know. I mean, I grew up in a broken home, but I always knew the kind of father that I wanted to be. And so that's the father, that's the kind of dad and husband that I tried to be. And it's interesting. We didn't, you know, do you tell your child, you know, that your baby's sick? And the answer for us was 100% yes. We didn't even think twice about it. We had kids at home that were so excited that mom was pregnant. I mean, they could see that she's pregnant. Mm-hmm. And they're so excited. And so I'll never forget, you know, one of the hardest days of our life was the day that we learned. We went to the Fulton Sheen Shrine in Peoria and kind of asked for his intercession. And we prayed, and wow, our faith was so greatly, it just really built during that process. And I remember our doctor saying, you know, a lot of families, you know, husbands and wives that go through something like this, you know, that's the end of their marriage. And like, you obviously don't know, you don't know us and what faith is for us. And it was hard, but man, we ended up really supporting each other. We came home, and I never forget telling our children, and we all just hugged and cried and prayed. Yeah. And they even were able to hold their little brother after he was born, and, you know, hold his body. And we wanted them to have that closure. And I think, you know, many years ago, the children would have been excluded from so much of that process, and for better or for worse, I don't know. But for us, like, that's our family. And we talk about Fulton, and Fulton actually has two other siblings with him in heaven. We had Francis that passed at 17 weeks for no rhyme or reason. He was perfectly healthy. And then we had Carol, which is very, very early on, and just, you know, a few weeks in. And so we never were able to meet Carol, but they've been with us every step of the way. And so I really appreciate that. And it's, you know, the fact that you were told, you know, just take your daughter to a nursing home. Wow. Yeah. How much does faith play a role in your life? And was your faith tested at all, or was it strengthened when you were going through your challenges?
Yes and yes, right? Both. So I know when we first received Loretta's diagnosis, I was sure that God was punishing me, right? That there was a reason, right? And I was being punished. But somehow I actually found my faith deepening and my faith growing during that time. And I think that because at that moment, I don't know, I can't explain it. It's because I realized I need God, right? Because without that faith, what is it all about? You know, and so having that faith was a lifeline because it grounded us. And thanks be to God, my husband and I, you know, he's very faith filled and, you know, going to church on Sunday with our kids. And it's always been a big part of our lives. And I think that was really, really a big help for us. It plays a big role. And I also think that your example, Royce, for your family and all those parents who carry to term when the diagnosis is, you know, when there is a diagnosis, we are showing or modeling for our other children what unconditional love looks like, right? So we don't realize that, but when your kids see that, you know, yes, you love this, you love your baby no matter what, that they know that you love them no matter what, right? Yeah. So that's one of the things that we wouldn't think about. And I think the medical community, to, you know, I think there's a misplaced compassion in someone who's going to say, oh, you can put her in a nursing home, as if to say, this is better for you, or this is better for your family, or you don't want to have to worry about it. So it's some kind of convoluted thinking where they think they're helping you. And it's not that different from the doctor who says, you know what, why don't you just try again? And, you know, we can do an early induction, which would be a euphemism for an abortion. So it takes a lot of strength for a couple to withstand that kind of pressure. And I'll say that right back to you, because when I received the diagnosis, what we were given was a Xerox copy of a couple of paragraphs from a medical textbook. And it said what I said earlier, that the condition was incompatible with life, that she would have a grim and futile existence. Grim and futile is how she was described. And so, but she's alive right here. And so imagine, and when I first met Tracy in 2019, and I described that to her, she said, it hasn't changed. Because my baby was born in 1996. So when I spoke to Tracy in 2019, I said, oh, in those days, they used to say this, but I'm sure it's changed. She said, it hasn't changed.
In those days. Saying, as if it was that long ago, right? You're making me feel old now.
But so it hasn't changed. So I think that it's a lot of things that are going on with the medical community, but some of it could be misplaced compassion.
No, right? Look, and you know, God love the medical community, right? But I can recall my grandfather was battling. First, he had Lyme disease. He got bit by a tick. So Lyme disease goes to the hospital and they're like, oh, by the way, you have leukemia at the same time. So we can treat it. And he misunderstood that, you know, if he had done nothing, his life expectancy was probably 5 to 10 years, just kind of doing nothing. It was at relatively early stages. But they gave him this chemotherapy and he was dead within 2 months and the chemo killed him. And I'll never forget when the doctor came in and basically was like, oh, there's really nothing else we can do for your body. You know, is just completely shutting down. And the way they delivered that news was so blunt and so uncompassionate. And the look in his eyes was just, he just totally gave up. Before that moment, he was fighting and he just completely gave up. And so I think about that, you know, so the compassion, you know, it's gotta be hard delivering that news. And how do you say it? You know, so I wouldn't want to be in the doctor's shoes. But wow, you know, we're not just numbers, and neither are these babies, and neither are these moms who are, like you said, the trauma. And I think it's interesting how you mentioned the trauma came back when your daughter died. You started experiencing those things all over again.
Mm-hmm. And then I realized that I was grieving at the diagnosis. But to your point, I think that the doctors don't know what to do, right? Because they've not seen a family carried to term. And the doctor is going to see 200 babies in a year, and you've only got one. And so it's a very different relationship. And so I think that if the more doctors can see parents like you, Royce, carrying to term, they will start to understand that there is another option. Because, right, the research says that parents want another option. Mm. Most parents enter into prenatal testing with no intention to abort, regardless of the results. However, most 80% choose, right? A majority might choose to abort when they get that diagnosis. However, when an offer of prenatal support is given, 80% choose to carry to term because there's just this missing piece, and that's what we're hoping to fill. So this national training program that Be Not Afraid is sponsoring is enabling local services to develop across the country that can help parents.
No, that's so important. I think that's such a great point. You know, if people realize that, yeah, there is a path forward and there's a beautiful path forward.
Right.
Carry and love that baby every moment that God gives you with that baby. And for better or for worse, that unconditional love, you don't have to do, I mean, yeah, I love that. You know, there's that support and making sure people know. And that's why so much in the pro-life movement, a lot of the work I do, one of the things we're doing right now is we're creating these little summits across the country. And we've got one coming up in Naples, Florida, and we're working on one in Kansas and a few other places. But the idea is, look, there are resources in your community that are doing amazing things, from maternity homes to shelters to pregnancy centers to you name it. And so many of these ministries, people don't even know about them. They don't even realize that there's a, you know, mobile pregnancy van that will give free ultrasounds. They think they have to go to the abortion clinic and they have to do, you don't. There's these faith-based, and some of them aren't even faith-based. They are secular, but they're there because they affirm life. And there are these tools and these resources. So I think that's so important. And that's why Be Not Afraid is so amazing, because there's really nothing like it in this country. There's no other ministry that I'm aware of that operates on a national or even international scale, providing, you know, counseling to women and helping families grieve and helping them through their journey to term. And a few, actually, we're actually just up against, I think, our next break here in just a moment. So when we come back on the other side of this break, we'll pick up this conversation. You're listening to Catholic Conversations, and I am your guest host today, Royce Hood. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Debbie Giorgiani from EWTN's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. I'll be hosting Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon on April 12th, 13th, and 14th. Yes, you'll hear me live on air, specifically speaking to you, the Catholic Spirit Radio listeners in Central and Northern Illinois. This will be the first time that Catholic Spirit Radio is having a live broadcast, so it's going to be a blast. Besides me, you'll also get to hear from a lot of people dropping by the station to make their donations. Plus, since our theme for the Carathon is Jesus, We Trust in You, we'll be talking and learning lots about divine mercy. It's sure to be an exciting 3 days. Catholic Spirit Radio is an outstanding and important voice in your community, and we must keep it on the air. Please join me in this effort, because we need Catholic radio now more than ever. Funds are needed to maintain and update equipment and pay the monthly expenses. We need your support, especially during these days. So save the date. Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon, April 12th through the 14th.
Join Holy Trinity and historic St. Pat's parishes in Bloomington in welcoming internationally renowned authors, speakers, and theologians, Drs. Scott Hahn and John Bergsma, as they make a rare speaking appearance to Central Illinois. This special event is being hosted by Holy Trinity Church in Bloomington Saturday, April 29th, 8:45 to 3:30. Seating is limited, so please register now. Don't miss out on this inspiring and blessed event. Learn more at the Holy Trinity website at hsp-ht.org.
John Albee here. I've been a realtor for over 50 years, and I love helping people buy and sell homes. Team Albee, the only name you may ever need in real estate. 309-275-5646.
This is it. The final performances ever in Bloomington, Illinois. This is the last season for the spectacular performances of the American Passion Play, the greatest story ever told.
The American Passion Play brings Christian history to life with authentic costumes, elaborate settings, and live animals. There's intrigue, drama, friendship, and as the plot unfolds, betrayal, sorrow, and love. You must see the American Passion Play before its final curtain falls at the Center for the Performing Arts in Bloomington.
Viewed by generation after generation, this is theater at its best. Performance dates are March 11, 18, 25, and April 1st, and each performance begins promptly at 1 p.m. Reserve your American Passion Play tickets today by calling 309-829-3903.
Has an abortion experience left you feeling empty and alone? Rachel's Vineyard Retreat offers healing for those who struggle with the emotional and spiritual pain. This retreat is for mothers and fathers, whether single or married, and for grandparents, siblings, or anyone suffering the effects of an abortion loss. Confidentially register now for the March 24th through 26th retreat by calling 309-264-1489 or by emailing rvrpeoria@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Conversations. I'm your co-host today, Royce Hood, and we are with a very special guest, Leah Sonic, who has just such an incredible story. She had a beautiful daughter that they lost after 8 months, and she's been, since that time, has been involved with an organization called Be Not Afraid, and she's also, I think, working on something else. I don't know how much of the beans she's willing to spill on this program, but I understand she's working on her own ministry. What can you tell us? What can't you tell us? And everything in between.
Well, because Be Not Afraid is responding to a need across the country for more local service providers, they've created a national training program. And so I am participating in that training, which is extensive and fantastic. And it's learning that Be Not Afraid model of care. And, you know, you used earlier the word counsel, Royce, in describing what they do. And it, I would imagine it sounds that way, but they make a very particular point about saying we serve parents as equals, right? That we are there with them. We're creating community around them. And that's that service model. And so we have we're receiving the training here, and the ministry that we're going to be offering is called My Beautiful One. And we took the name from the Song of Songs. We are not ready to fly yet. We are probably more than halfway through the training. We are in Northern New Jersey, and it is our hope that we can work through the office of the Archdiocese. Whether we can or not, we still plan to go ahead with a local service here in Northern New Jersey called My Beautiful One. So we don't have an online presence yet, but with the grace of God, we will be able to serve parents and to get the word out. Because you mentioned earlier, parents are, you know, you receive a diagnosis, you're distraught, you're traumatized, you don't know where to turn. And if the doctors don't have any experience with parents carrying to term, they don't know what to tell you, except that this is what other parents do, right? That they terminate. But if we can put in front of them that we have this model of care, if we can get a seat at the table with them and say, you've got 200 babies, we can help, you know, we'll be with these parents. You know, we've seen parents carry to term. And then we can say to the parents, look, these are some questions you can ask. And if these are the tests that you've had, well, maybe this test doesn't tell the whole answer. And maybe you should see, you know, a specialist, a cardiologist, if your baby seems to have a cardiac issue. So we can somehow get involved with just trying to give the parents agency, give the parents autonomy, but first and foremost, give them community. We can be that community for them in their isolation. And then giving them that agency, giving them some, you know, some ways to think and reframe. What we want to do is reframe the conversation.
That's great.
And they report then that when they come to the birth or the continuation of the pregnancy, they have more peace because diagnosis day, as you said, is the worst day. Tracy says it's a train wreck. And yeah. So what their model, the Be Not Afraid model of care is, okay, you're in a train wreck. We've been in a train wreck too. We know how to get the train back on the tracks. And we're going to go to a destination. It might not be the original destination you had in mind, but we're going to be with you and we're going to go to a new destination together.
Yeah, it's so funny. And men and women take that train wreck so differently, right? And there's no way to articulate sort of the in the different ways. Everybody probably takes it differently based on, you know, their experience, their upbringing, their faith, and so forth. For us, it took our faith from a 10 to a 20. And I think for me, being a guy, men, you know, it's sort of stereotypical, I guess. But like if, you know, if the wife is complaining about something and it's in man's nature, I think we just want to fix everything. We're not always great listeners. Like, okay, well, we'll go change the light bulb if the light is broken. And that might not always be the thing to do. Like sometimes it's good just to be quiet and listen, right? Mm-hmm. So that was my attitude. Like, okay, we've got this challenge. We're going to figure it out. And we've looked really, really hard. Like there's got to be something. And it turns out there are there's certain injections and different things that could be available for babies with Potter syndrome. And there was a study at Johns Hopkins that we looked at. We had a professional from St. Louis, a doctor, contact us and say, hey, I might be able to help you. Here's a trial thing we could do. And we looked really, really carefully at that. And it was with Fulton, if he had just had the Potter syndrome by itself, there might have been some path with one of these studies that we could have participated in. But he ended up having spinal anomalies, heart complications, issues with his legs. I mean, he had pretty much every single thing that you could even not imagine. I mean, it's unimaginable. And my wife really put it so beautifully. She came to the acceptance and to the realization that our precious son, Fulton, just wasn't made for this world. Mm. He wasn't made for this world. He was made for heaven. And I think back to a saying, a guy, I think it was Joe Shiler, the late Joe Shiler, who passed away, who started a group called Pro-Life Action League. He would say something like, you know, if God wants a doctor, he doesn't pick up the yellow pages and people today don't even know what the Yellow Pages are. But he doesn't pick up the Yellow Pages. He makes a baby. If he needs a soldier, he doesn't pick up the, you know, doesn't go recruiting at the high school. He makes a baby. If, you know, he needs a mom, he makes a baby. Right.
Wow.
And I do believe that, you know, thinking about it, you know, sometimes we don't understand God's will, but sometimes life is made for a bigger purpose than what we can possibly understand. So anyway, I love the fact that, you know, groups like Be Not Afraid are willing to walk with the family in their journey. And the other thing I'll just say too is the fact that you're praying about your own ministry and that you're looking at starting something and being a pillar in your own community. Will your ministry focus on the community that you're in, or will you guys go outside of your community?
I think we will be open to that, right? I mean, because if you look at in my role in peer ministry with Be Not Afraid, it was telephone, it was text, it was email. So we can do the same thing here. I think the idea of the model of training local service providers is that we maybe can meet, you know, in person. Maybe we can accompany to a doctor's appointment if the parents wanted that. Maybe we can attend the birth. That would be one of the benefits of being geographically close. But a lot of the communication would be, you know, text or phone call anyway.
Yeah, so well, you guys, I mean, look, if you're in the New Jersey area, especially in the, I mean, just the whole, I mean, you've got enough people there that you'll probably have your work cut out for you.
Wow. Yeah, please. Yeah, and listen, we'll take what the Lord gives us and with his guidance, hopefully be able to serve and journey with the parents, as you say.
Has anything you've seen in the work that you're in or the, you know, just even just in the ministries that you've been involved with, have we seen an increase in prenatal diagnosis, you know, across the board in recent history, or is it just being reported more?
I'm going to speak just, you know, anecdotally. I think the answer is, yeah, we're seeing more prenatal diagnosis because the testing now is happening earlier and earlier. So there are blood tests now that are called NIPTs, non-invasive prenatal tests. These tests can be offered to parents as early as 10 weeks of pregnancy. And it is a screening test. And that screening test may predict a likelihood of a genetic anomaly. The problem with those tests is that they have a very high false positive rate. So they were designed for a certain population of moms at a certain age for a certain diagnosis of, for example, Down syndrome. And for that, they are accurate. But what's happened is they're being used now almost as a standard across all age groups of moms and for any kind of rare anomaly. And so there is a higher likelihood of a false positive for all those other conditions that are extremely rare because the test wasn't designed for that.
So the mom receives a false positive on, you know, this prenatal diagnosis, and then probably 9 out of 10 times the solution offered is termination of pregnancy.
Very often that's the case. Or since that's a screening test, see, it's also like a screening versus diagnostic test is another part of the conversation. But if it's acknowledged that it's a screening test, then their parent is now told, well, you'll have to have some more invasive testing. But the cell on the blood test, it's non-invasive. Okay, I'll have the non-invasive blood test. That's no problem. But now what? Now I've received a screening positive for a condition. Now what do I do? So there's a lack of informed consent, even with the testing, which is a problem.
No, I know of a story that is of a doctor who I know who in medical school, he did not participate in, it was an abortion procedure, but he was in medical school, but some of his classmates did. And it was a baby that was representatives not having kidneys. And so they aborted the baby and it turned out the baby was totally fine. And that was many years ago before the testing was better. But I just remember this particular doctor sort of traumatized him that he was, you know, I think he was observing or something like that. And it was just terrible, terrible experience. And I think he vowed never to participate in anything like that again professionally. And I think like we turned down most of the testing. You know, particularly things that like screen for, you know, things like Down syndrome. I mean, for us, we don't care. Right. Whatever God gives us is what God gives us. And I think the only reason why we discovered the issue with Fulton was because of the ultrasound. They could tell that, you know, there wasn't the amniotic fluid and, you know, looking and they could see the kidneys and they just weren't there. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think for us, that's something that I think a lot of people need to consider that. Obviously, I'm not a doctor, so I can't give medical advice. But ask yourself, what would you do differently? Is there anything that you're going to do differently based on the outcome of this test? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is no, then maybe less is more in some instances. Have faith.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. But what's so popular today, though, is that you can go for this blood test to find out the gender of your baby, which is so popular now. So I think a lot of parents are gung-ho, like, oh, great, we're going to go in. We're going to find out if we're having a baby boy or a baby girl. And instead of finding that out, there are those cases where the doctor's saying, actually, we've discovered a problem and we think, you know, the best answer is to terminate. So that adds to the trauma, right?
Oh, my goodness.
You've walked in there looking to find out what you're having and you're told you shouldn't have.
All they have to do is wait a few weeks. Wait a few more weeks for the ultrasound and you're going to know if it's a boy or a girl. Look, less is more. I don't know if I'm a paranoid conspiracy person or not, but I just feel like, especially since the whole COVID thing, I have many doctors. We have doctors in our family. And I like I said, I have a lot of respect for the medical community, but less is more. I recently heard an interview. She might have been 106 years old or something, but this woman was like, you know, what's the secret to life? And she's like, well, I eat lots of bacon and I avoid the doctors. Now, for me, the bacon wouldn't be a good idea, but I just thought it was funny. I don't know if she was joking or not, but she avoided the doctor. Go when you need to, but how many people by the time they're, you know, in their 60s or 70s, they're taking, you know, just a bag. There's a whole Ziploc bag full of pills. You know, you take one thing for something and then you take something for something else. I don't know.
It gets complicated for sure. It gets complicated.
It does.
But I think that your point about the prenatal diagnosis is the testing, right? That there has to be more of an informed consent. You know, like, okay, if the results show something, what's going to happen? And it's hard for a parent to put themselves in that space because they're never told that, right? There's a sort of collective silence that, oh, maybe if I have this test, and there is something wrong, we can do something about it, right? But there's this sense that maybe you can do something about it, but you can't. So if you find out that there's something wrong, your choice is now either to have your baby or have an abortion. Like, you know, it's very complicated.
No, life is, look, I think bottom line is this: life is beautiful and it can be a challenge. Wow. And I know my mother always said, you know, getting old is not for the faint of heart. The older you get, the more pricks and pokes you get, right? But man, what you're doing, Leah, is just absolutely beautiful. And we really wish you all the best of luck with the ministry that you're discerning. And we hope that you can get it off the ground. And when you do, when you guys officially launch, we'd love to have you back on this program to kind of tell us what you're doing and to share the website and all the other things that you're not able to tell us today. We want to know about those. I think for the last few minutes of this program, what I'm going to do is I'm going to plug in Fulton's song for our listeners. Aww. And that's related directly to what we're talking about now. Fulton's song was recorded at his 22-week ultrasound. I went in and I recorded the heartbeat. We could hear the heartbeat. So I've got the audio of that. And I took it home and I prayed about it for a few weeks. And his heartbeat became the beats per minute, the metronome for a song, which would become known as Fulton's song. And we wrote the song and we played it for Fulton every night during our pregnancy with Fulton. And so we'll close this episode of Catholic Conversations with that. Leah, you're welcome to stick around for it if you'd like. But otherwise, we just want to thank you for all that you're doing for moms and for families and for babies out there.
Thanks for having me, Royce. And thanks for the offer of having us back. And I'll take you up on it. And I'd love to stay for the song. That sounds beautiful.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations on Catholic Spirit Radio. This is Fulton Song. Thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Start as I sing the song, Fulton, you're here now. coffee in the womb, forsaken here now. So we fill this home with all our love. Fill this home with all our love. Surround you.
Listening to Catholic Conversations. Download our podcasts at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.